Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, yo, we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there for home loan solutions that fit your life. Rocket can. The new format in postseason baseball is here, and it starts tomorrow. And I know I was down in the dumps early in the week because my Mets team blew a 10.5 lead and they didn't win the NL East, but I have moved on that. I have purchased tickets for Saturday night. I'm ready to go, rock and roll, get all fired up for game number two between the Mets and the Padres. And we got a lot of baseball to talk about really for the next month or so as we try to see who's going to be going to the Fall Classic and winning the entire thing. So let's head out to the guest line right now and welcome in a World Series champion. Does a great job. CBS Sports HQ is an analyst for the Red Sox as well. And that's Will Middlebrooks. Will, how you been?
Yo, but what's up, man? Good to be back.
Well, good. It's good to have you on, and we appreciate you stopping by. So we've seen a lot of strategies here early on for the way that these pitching matchups are set up. Let's talk about them right out of the gate. First one, Max Scherzer going game one for the Mets against the Padres, and then if the Mets win, it looks like Chris Bassitt will actually go game two. If the Mets lose game one, then they'll most likely run DeGrom out for game number two. Do you understand what Buck Showalter's doing here?
Yeah, my initial reaction was that I hated it, but the more I thought about it, it makes sense because I think they are, I mean, they're facing Darvish and Snell, who pitch really good down the stretch for the Padres, and they're throwing the ball well right now. But I think it's actually them showing confidence that they can win it in two, because let's say they do win it in two games. Who do you get game one versus the Dodgers? DeGrom's ready to go game one, and then you could possibly see him again for game five. So in a perfect world, They win this in two games, and then you get DeGrom twice against the Dodgers. That would be ideal. Now, it's hard to get behind the fact of if you go up one game, why not take the opportunity to just step on their necks right there and just win it? I'm not saying that Chris Bassitt can't do that, but I feel like DeGrom is the guy to give you the best chance to win. And then all bets are off in game three, so it's like, anything can happen in a one-game series. So I'm up in the air with it, but I definitely understand the reasoning behind it.
If you were in the Padres locker room, and I don't think you need any extra motivation, it's the playoffs, you know what's at stake here, would you maybe be saying, wow, these guys think they're going to be able to be queued up against up and set us up the rotation so they could get to the next round and make it easier for them? Could that provide a little bit of an extra spark to the Padres?
No. Not at all. This is the big leagues, and Chris Bassitt's a very good pitcher. It's not like they're bringing up a Triple-A kid to pitch against them in game two. Like, Chris Bassitt has been very, very good. So I don't think the Padres look at it that way whatsoever.
Who wins that series between the Padres and the Mets?
Mets. And when we started the show, you said you're down because the Mets blew the lead. They blew the division. No, they didn't. The Braves won the division. The Mets 100 games. Let's not forget about that. They're a very good baseball team. They have to play an extra round. They're going to have to go through the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a lot of question marks. The Mets can still win the World Series. I still have them getting to the NLCS, but I do have them losing to the Braves in that.
Well, that would be tough. Yeah. I liked how you first started that off. They could go to the NLCS, and then you say losing to the Braves. Yeah, come on. Well, I thought we were better friends than that.
Friends are honest.
Will Middlebrooks here with us. So I know that you have an interesting take here on Quintana going for the Cardinals. A lot of people were surprised that he was their game one starter up against the Phillies' Zach Wheeler. That game going to get underway tomorrow at 2:07 p.m. Eastern with these funky start times in the Major League Baseball postseason. What's your theory on Quintana going?
I like it. So the playoffs are about who's – obviously you have your set lineup and this and that, but for the most part, you go with the hot hand. And if you look at Quintana over – let's go back to September 6th, his first start in September, so he has six starts. He only allowed three runs over those six starts total. at the most five hits in those starts. Who are two of the biggest catalyst bats in the Phillies lineup? Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber, two lefties. And now you dig deeper in that. You look at his numbers against lefties over that span and through September and one start in October. He has a 0.8 ERA and almost a 30% strikeout percentage and tons of weak contact, which plays because St. Louis is one of the better defensive teams, 70 defensive runs saved this year, which is fourth in baseball. So I think it matches up well because he's number one, he's throwing the ball well. Number two, he shoves against lefties, and that's two of their biggest bats.
Talking to Will Middlebrooks right now. So do you like the Cardinals in that series, it seems like?
I do. Their weak point is their starting pitching. I mean, getting Jordan Montgomery was huge for the Yankees at the deadline. That helped their rotation a lot. I don't know how much they're going to lean on Wainwright or Flaherty because he missed a lot of the year. So there's some question marks there, but I think in a three-game series, even though they're going up against Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, look, you got Goldschmidt and Arenado, two MVP candidates. One's going to win the MVP, and Arenado's going to come in second place. So you're going to score some runs. And I think you have enough pitching, and like I said, Quintana's hot right now, where they can win two games.
Will Middlebrooks here with us from CBS Sports HQ. This is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I love that Pujols is back on the Cardinals for this final season. I could not have expected him to get this hot. No one did. The 700 home runs was awesome. Just what's been your thought on this from being the former player and knowing what Pujols means to the game, what he's been able to do really the last month or two?
I love it. I think it's been good for the game. It's given something for people to watch other than just their team. They're going and watching someone else's team. I love when we get to watch someone else's at bats during another game. You know, we saw that with Judge over the last couple of weeks. It's fun, man. We got to see Miguel Cabrera, 3,000 hits. We get to see 62 homers from a Yankee. We get to see 700 homers, 702? Yeah, from Pujols. You know, and it's just, I played against him a ton. And just knowing the guy he is, how much work he puts in, and he's done it the right way, where he's never been questioned or never failed a test, never had any issues with steroids. And he's just, I don't know, I love it for the game because of who he is and the person he is.
You mentioned steroids. When it gets to the whole Judge conversation, I still look at Bonds as having the most home runs in an individual season. Some people, they tell me that, it's Aaron Judge because he's done it the clean way. How do you kind of approach that conversation?
Barry Bonds is still the home run king. I mean, he's 11 more than Judge. Isn't that ridiculous to even think about? Can you imagine Judge hitting 11 more? Like, that, it's insane. But, like, Barry Bonds, as we know, he never failed a test. But it's the physical appearance. Like, we know.
He used.
Right? We know he did it. We know he used PEDs. But he's also a product of his era. Same with McGuire. Same with Sosa. Same with all those guys in that era. Let's not forget, pitchers probably took it too. It's not just Barry Bonds wasn't the only guy to take steroids. He's still the home run king. That's the era. We can't take that away. But that said, Aaron Judge doing this the way testing is now and him doing this clean is very, very impressive. And the fact that he almost won a triple crown, which would have been the best triple crown of all time. I wish he had pulled that off, but Arias came away with the I think he lost it. He had RBIs too, didn't he? Yeah. He just needed the average. Which he lost by like 4 points, I think. If he had pulled that off, man, it's going to make the MVP talk. And no, don't corner me about the MVP right now because I don't know.
Whoa, what do you mean you don't? It has to be Judge. I love Otani, but Otani should not win the MVP this year.
My initial reaction is it's got to be Judge, but then you look at the numbers. Dude, he's elite on both sides. He's not just good. He had the fourth best OPS plus in baseball, and he had the fourth best ERA plus in baseball. He was in the top four in pitching and hitting, and he qualified as a pitcher with 162 innings pitched. What are we, let's not get desensitized to his greatness because Aaron Judge has the seventh most home runs of all time, right? I'm with you. I'm with you. If Aaron Judge doesn't win an MVP this year, then you got to give it to Otani every year he's here because no one's going to top that.
Here's the bigger thing with Otani. I really don't care about the MVP. I do think it should be Judge. I want him on a different team, and I want Trout on a different team too because the Angels – that they have both. It used to be, oh, you have Trout, you can't make the playoffs, it's ridiculous, we're getting robbed of that. Now we're being robbed of both Trout and Ohtani in the playoffs.
What do you think of this? Okay, so he signed that one-year arbitration deal for $30 million. He's worth every bit of $45, $50 million, right? So do you think he signed that in hopes that maybe that's easier to move him and trade him?
Potentially. Like, I would request that if I'm him.
If he signed like a, you know, a six-year $300 million deal, or it's going to be more than that probably, it's going to be a lot harder to trade that contract. But he just signed a one-year $30 million deal. I feel like anybody would take that.
Yeah, Billy Epler and the Mets, I know Steve Cohen could afford it, and Billy Epler knows him. I'm all in Ohtani and Queens next year.
But they're not going to trade him. It's a joke. They're not. He's a cash cow for them. It's a business outside of winning. They don't care about winning, obviously.
And then when he hits free agency, he should leave. He should not stay.
I agree.
What's your gut tell you right now, Will Middlebrooks, about Aaron Judge? Where is Aaron Judge playing baseball next year?
Oh, the New York Yankees. They're going to give him a blank check. And knowing him, he'll take less than – I mean, the fact that he bet on himself when he was offered $213 million.
Yeah, $30.5 million a year.
He's like, nah, I'm good. And then went out and did that with that pressure on him. That was insane. And I think he'll be – I mean, why not sign him a six-year, $300 million deal? You're the New York Yankees. You can do whatever you want. You're already over the tax bracket. So keep going. Make him $50 million a year. Load it up on the front. You don't have to pay as much on the back end for a DH when he's 36. But, I mean, that body is going to age differently than, a normal player. He's 6'7", 280. That is not going to age well. But up until 35, 36, 37, he is still going to be an elite hitter and an elite player in this league.
If you were him, would you go home and would you go to the Giants or not so much?
No. You stay in New York. I mean, it's just different, man. I know that's home for him, and there's a lot of – I mean, the Dodgers are – arguably one of the best, I think, top four, top five of like a seven-year span of all time, the amount of games they've been winning. So there's good baseball out there, but we don't get to watch it. No one gets to see it on the East Coast because it starts at 10:10 at night. That's beyond why he should do it, but I just think like he needs to be in this market. He needs to be in New York and be the face of the New York Yankees for the next 6 years. Like, come on. You can't. It doesn't get better than that. I'm sorry. He's going to be disappointed if he goes to San Francisco, regardless if he gets to sleep in his own bed or not. He can buy his own bed and put it in Manhattan if he wants.
Well, Middlebrooks here with us. How do you see the two AL series playing out between Tampa and the Guardians and then the Mariners and Blue Jays?
The Tampa and Cleveland, that's going to be a very interesting series. I think it's two teams that are a lot alike as far as low payroll and young talent go. I really like Cleveland, and I'm going to take the underdog. I'm going to take Cleveland in three. I just love I love Tito Francona. I love they play old school baseball, right? Like, don't strike out. They hit behind runners. They hit and run. They bunt guys over. They pick it on defense and they pitch. And that's an anomaly in today's game. And people don't know how to combat that sometimes because they don't see it every day. I mean, the fact that they won 92 games with the youngest team in baseball with one of the more old-school coaches in the game, that's impressive. And Tito Francona is probably manager of the year.
How about the Mariners and Blue Jays?
Yeah, I'm going Seattle. Toronto is the better team. I think Seattle has the it factor. I think they have the clutch factor, and it just kind of seems like it's meant to be. I don't have them going to the World Series or anything. But the travel situation sucks. There's no way around that. They got to go all the way across the country and then further north in the true north in Canada, right? So I'm going to go with Seattle in three. I think Luis Castillo, like, throws a big game, game one. That's why you traded for him, to be that guy. And then I think ex-Blue Jay Robbie Ray gets hit around a little bit in game two by the Blue Jays because those right-handed bats mass lefties. And then Logan Gilbert, I think, can save them in game three. But like I said, Seattle just kind of has the clutch gene. They just find ways to win. They don't score runs. They're like 20th in runs scored or something. It's not good. But they pitch and play defense, and they just score when they need to.
So earlier, Will Middlebrooks, before we let you run, you said you like the Mets and the Braves in the NLCS, and you have the Braves going back to the World Series. Why are you down on the Dodgers? That's just more so confidence in the Mets.
I think the Dodgers, all right, they won 110 games. So I'm not like, shooing them away or anything, but – they have a lot of question marks for a 100-plus win team. What Tony Gonsolin are you going to get from a forearm strain? Is his stuff the same? What postseason Kershaw shows up? Tyler Anderson, great year, but he's only started one postseason game in his life. Like, that's a big deal. Craig Kimbrell, your closer, he's a flip of a coin. What else? Gratterall, Trinan, those guys have been dealing with injuries the whole second half. So what is their bullpens are a big deal in the postseason, because we're looking at guys coming in high leverage situations in the fifth, and then you got to cover four innings. So they have a lot of question marks. So I think the Mets are better built for their starters to go deeper in the game, and then I love Edwin Diaz to come in and close it out. But I think Atlanta takes them down, and Atlanta's the most well-rounded, complete baseball team, in my opinion.
Are they winning the World Series again?
Yeah, they're going to play Houston in the World Series and win in seven.
Why not the Yankees taking down Houston? I feel like that's the question we ask each and every year.
They have pitching issues. They had way too many injuries. I think Clay Holmes just had a cortisone shot in his shoulder. So he's supposed to be back. You know, he has the days off because they get a bye. But what's he going to be like? Who else? You're going to have to put Aroldis Chapman on your roster because you have injuries. You need him. He's so inconsistent. Like, is he going to come in and throw 10 straight balls, or is he going to strike everyone out in 9 pitches? Like, you just never know.
And I can't trust Gerrit Cole in a big game.
Say that again?
I can't trust Gerrit Cole in a big game.
No, you know, you're right. You know, I trust I think I like Severino. I would start Severino in game one, honestly.
Wow. How about that?
I like Severino's stuff. I like Cortez in game two. I'm not taking anything away from Cole. Cole still has good stuff, but he isn't the same guy he was. And I don't want to get into like the sticky stuff and this and that, but it's not just him. It's a lot of guys that saw a big change in their stuff. And I think that, I mean, he still led the league in strikeouts. So let's not act like he's having a bad year. He's just not as dominant as he was before.
If you started Severino in game one over Cole, I think you may ruin Cole mentally. It would never happen, but you would ruin him mentally.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And I'm just stirring the pie as I stare at my Red Sox on my World Series ring right now. That's just what I do with the Yankees. I just like the backstroke in their mind, you know. But they have a lot of questions in their bullpen. And like I said, they're going to score runs. I actually think Judge goes off in the playoffs because that pressure is just melted off of him. Now he's done with the whole 62 thing and all that's over. And now he can get back to his regular approach. Big part of the field. He's going to get pitched to again. He's not having to chase to try to make something happen. And we're going to see Aaron Judge just like he was during the regular season.
All righty. By the way, now we have to get down to some serious business. If your wife, right, Jenny Dell, needs some security to try to go after Nick Saban when Nick Saban wants her to ask a question that she already asked, I will send you my resume, by the way, to be the security guard.
Listen, if anybody can handle it on their own, it's Jenny, man. She's unfazed. She worked in Boston. She's got thick skin. She deals with me every day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's maybe worse. So she's, like I said, she's unfazed by that. She's a pro.
Were you watching that interview as it was happening?
Yes, mouth on the floor.
So you were not happy with Nick Saban.
This isn't a first-time occurrence, all right? It's not. He's not surprising anyone when he goes off after games. It's not. He's in the moment, too. Like, he's in the game. I never put anything past players or coaches right after the game because you're still in game mode, right? So I'm not going to hold that. And Jenny said the same thing. She gets it.
Jenny's nice. I don't know if I would have handled that the same way. That's why she's a professional, and I'm just some jackass talking on the radio. Well, Middlebrooks, thanks so much. You're the best, my friend.
Thanks, man. I enjoyed it.
There you go. Will Middlebrooks joining us. So he has the Astros and the Braves in the World Series with the Braves winning it all. And I can't say that he's wrong. Here's the only thing, though, about Atlanta, Ryan. I know they just won the World Series. They did a lot of celebrating for winning that NL East. And I just wonder if there's a little hangover. I know they don't play for a few days, clearly. They don't play till next week. But I just wonder how you reel it back in, even though that's a team that has seen everything being a World Series champ.
Make a good point. They seemed very hung up on winning the division. And look, it was an incredible comeback. But also at the same time, winning the division is like step one of five. Like, okay, you won the division. Congratulations. It's not the end all be all. And for their fans especially, it almost seems like winning the NL East was kind of like hit the finish line when really the race is just starting.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll come on back in 5 minutes.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. As the dust settles from last week's games, it's time to look at which teams are rising. Touchdown! And which are falling.
And there's an interception.
Zach ranks his top five NFL and college football teams on this week's edition of Take 5, only on The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, let's start with college first because I think it's a lot less complicated here. Number five, it's the same five teams that I've had for almost the entire year. Just the order continues to change inside the top five in the way that I've jumbled up these five teams. So number five, USC. Number four, I have put Michigan in that four spot. That's been the same the last 2 weeks. Ohio State back in at three. Georgia, after that sloppy performance against Missouri, have dropped them down to two. And Alabama, with a backup quarterback still taking advantage of Pick Suey, they find a way to go to the number one spot. So not a lot of change. USC 5, Michigan 4, Ohio State 3, and then I just flip-flop Georgia and Alabama. Georgia back to the two spot, Alabama in at one. Not really much of an explanation needed, but hot take, Hickey, speak now, forever hold your peace.
What about Clemson? Nice win last week. Undefeated DJU looking like Notre Dame DJU when he scorched them in that one game he played for Trevor Lawrence 2 years ago. Why no love for the Tigers?
I have been reassessing my opinion on Clemson. I am now taking Clemson a lot more seriously than what I did prior to their last two games. I did not like what I saw early on. Against Wake Forest, DJ Uiagalelei was phenomenal. Against NC State, DJ Uiagalelei did play really well. But we're in a world of tiebreakers. And when I'm in a world of tiebreakers and I'm looking at that team that I put in the fifth spot, it's very simple. The conference they play in matters. The Pac-12 this year is a better conference than the ACC. So that is why for now, I have kept Clemson on the outside looking into the top five.
If conference is a tiebreaker, what about Tennessee? Playing in the best conference in football, right?
Great point. Big reason there. I'm not going to put three teams from one conference in. And also, when you look at Tennessee, now they've been impressive. I'm not taking anything away from them. But when we're talking about in the top five conversation, and I really like Heupel, I really like Hendon Hooker. They're undefeated. That goes a long way. But right now, those two signature wins that they've had, they don't look as good as they did a few weeks ago. So important wins, but Florida has not looked good ever since their upset victory against Utah. And Anthony Richardson went from this darling, like top five pick potentially, to he hasn't been playing great football. And Pitt just lost to Georgia Tech. So that's why I kept Tennessee outside of the top five. Anyone else?
No, that's it.
Okay. How would you order those teams, by the way, 1 through 5?
I would go Bama 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3, Clemson 4, Michigan 5.
And USC outside of top 5.
Yes.
And you've been very big of the Trojans this
year. I have, but Clemson's resume is better. NC State's a top 10 team. They won that game. Wake Forest is ranked when they beat them. USC's played Oregon State, which is okay, but other than that, they've really played no one.
Now, you don't disagree, though, with my analysis that the Pac-12 is a better conference than the ACC.
Overall, yeah, but right now USC hasn't played any of the good teams. That's part of the issue.
Got it. Fair. Is the Pac-12 the second best conference in college football right now? We know the SEC is the creme de la creme. You have Bama and Georgia. And then you have teams like Kentucky, who's good. Tennessee, undefeated. Florida's still a solid squad, right? Arkansas is a good team. So we know the SEC is the top dog. After that, is it the Big Ten?
Or is it the Pac-12?
I go Pac-12 because they're deeper and more balanced.
That's the perfect way to answer it. Like, if I look at it as who has the teams that are the better odds to win a national title this year, yeah, you throw Michigan and Ohio State, you got two. And then when you look at the Pac-12, Utah lost their only really big game this year. UCLA is undefeated. Nice win last week up against Washington, who got to top 15. And then USC is that real hope. I really hope USC goes undefeated. I don't know where you stand on that. I would love to see USC in the college football playoff in year one.
Selfishly, I don't, because I want to see Utah make the college football playoff.
Oh, because that was your big take.
So I'm going to root for myself to be right. Mm-hmm. So with that being the case, sorry, USC.
But you've been jinxing.
Go down.
You've been jinxing a lot of the college football teams.
But it doesn't stop me from still rooting for my picks.
What was your take 2 weeks ago and last week? The two teams that you mushed?
Georgia was the best team by far in college football. No one else on their level. Almost lost to Missouri.
Yeah.
And I said all four of my college football playoff picks are still alive. And then Oklahoma, that was after their loss to Kansas State. And then Oklahoma went and got steamrolled by TCU to bury themselves 10 feet under the ground.
Now, your four picks before the year were Bama, Ohio State.
Utah, and Oklahoma.
Gotcha.
Okay. And Oklahoma has already been removed.
Yeah, so, and I don't think Utah nor Oklahoma. Well, Oklahoma won't be. I don't think Utah's going to get in the college football playoff because Bama, Georgia, both will. Ohio State will.
Utah wins out there in. Well, actually, that's not true. Wins out there in
because if Clemson wins out, they get in. They'd be undefeated.
We'll also start seeing a resume check too. It's going to be interesting. 12-1 Utah versus 13-0 Clemson.
Yeah,
it's going to be a fun debate.
No, it would be easy. 13-0 Clemson would get it. I do not. You're telling me the College Football Playoff Committee is going to go with Utah with one loss over an undefeated Dabo Sweeney and Clemson?
If the NC State's their best win. And you have Utah beating USC,
Clemson
twice,
will get in. Clemson will get in,
beating two other ranked teams along the way. That resume's impressive.
First off, the record's better, and then second off, anytime you want to put a bigger brand in, or you want to put a bigger coach in, or a bigger storyline to get more eyes to the television, there's one thing that is used, and I'm showing you my glasses right now: the eye test. You think that would be a debate?
Oh yeah, I don't think it's easy. That's not a lot, Clemson.
Let's go to the czar of college football. Ack, quick question: if Clemson's undefeated and Utah has one loss as a Pac-12 champion, who gets in the college football playoff?
I say Clemson.
Thank you. That's why.
I think it's the history that
Thank
even
you.
Though these things don't factor in, even though these things
but
don't
they do the eye test.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. They say they're not supposed to, but I think they do.
Hickey, I would really love to live in a world that you live in. You don't look at things through money and through kind of the business side of college football. You just go over the resume.
But this is what I don't understand. The 13 people picking the teams, what benefit do they get of revenue? That's ESPN. The 13 people in
partner.
The room, in the committee,
it's a partner.
Literally do not get any money from the ratings. So whether it does tenfold or twofold, they're getting the same amount of money. It's irrelevant.
They get paid to make their picks.
But who they pick is irrelevant.
Then ESPN will say we need a new college football playoff committee.
Exactly.
They rotate anyway.
Get those guys out.
They do that anyway. It's a new committee every year. People shuffle in, people shuffle out. There's no motivational incentive for the 13
But you
got to
keep the TV partners happy. They do care about that.
There's no TV partners, just ESPN.
Yes, keeping that partner happy is important for them.
I don't think so. Their contract's already locked in. Well, like, what are you going to do? You pick the four best teams.
So
that's all that matters.
You think brand has no, and getting the most eyeballs on that game possible has no indication on the game?
No. Okay. I think you're picking the four best teams.
We will agree to disagree on that. I got to go to the NFL here. This was the toughest take five I've ever had to do with NFL. The toughest. I did not put any team that's 2-2 in. And let me clarify. These are my feelings on these teams right now. A lot of these teams, or two of these teams, I do not think are Super Bowl contenders. But as Tom Brady said, there's a lot of sloppy football right now, a lot of ugly football. And I could only go with what I'm seeing right now. At number five, I know they're coming off a loss. Tua Tagovailoa not going to play this weekend. I can't crush them for losing to the Bengals. I didn't think they would beat the Bengals. They did beat the Bills. They did beat the Ravens. I'm putting the Dolphins in at number five. 4.
Wow.
I really have to swallow my pride here. The drama Dallas choking Cowboys. They're 3-0 without Dak Prescott. 3-1 on the year. Number 3, Buffalo. 2, they're not dead yet, the Kansas City Chiefs. And at number 1, the only undefeated team left in football, the Philadelphia Eagles. Hot take Hickey Spick now or forever hold your peace?
What about the 3-1 Packers? No they, love for they should, Rodgers?
They feel like 2-2. I've said that they're a Super Bowl contender. They feel more like a 2-2 team. They just took Bailey Zappe and the Patriots to overtime. So that's why I could not put them in the top 5 this week. I almost did. I almost gave them the edge over the Dolphins. But when you're 3-1, you got blown out by the Vikings, Pats take you to overtime, that didn't really sit well for me.
Speaking of 2-2, what about the 49ers?
Trust issues. Great defense. Top 5 defense. If Take 5 was only about defense, they would easily be in the top 5. But offensively, I know they bounced back this week. They beat the Rams. I don't know what to expect from Jimmy Garoppolo each and every week. He's the definition of inconsistent. I love Debo. Debo's really damn good. We know that. Trent Williams is out. And Kyle Shanahan, even though he's a good coach, he goes through these stretches where things kind of do get ugly, and then he usually finds a way to pull a rabbit out of the hat. So heck of a bounce back win, just crushing the Rams. But they're too inconsistent for me to put them in the top 5. How would you do your top 5, by the way?
Actually, I think I would probably keep it in the exact order you have it, to be honest.
Wow.
Yeah, I think you're right on the Cowboys 100%. I'm with you on the Packers. Their record says one thing, their play says the other. 49ers, I'm with you. They're too inconsistent right now. I think right now, 1-5, Eagles, Chiefs, Bills, Cowboys, Dolphins, in that order, I'm with you.
Now, this is a pretty good sample size of football so far. And the fact that I have two teams that I can't see a way in them getting to a Super Bowl this year in my top 5 shows me how bad the quality of football has been so far. Bills easily, Chiefs easily, Eagles easily. I can see them all getting to the Super Bowl. Cowboys, no way. Dolphins, no way as well. So that's Take 5. Zach Gilb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We will come on back, and we got to get it into this Draymond Green whole scenario with Jordan Poole. Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole.
Hey, guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
This season, for the first time, you can hear every Westwood One NFL broadcast stream live for free. Mondays, Thursdays, Sunday nights, the International Series, holiday triple headers, and every postseason game. Catch all the action on the Odyssey app on westwoodonesports.com. Via Westwood One station streams or by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports, all sponsored by AutoZone. Free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That is what makes AutoZone America's number one battery destination. Get in the zone. AutoZone. Did you see the parody story on Jordan Poole and Draymond Green and the reasoning in the parody story on how this fight did get all started here? Hot to kick. Have you been following the parody account for this one on Twitter?
Not the account, but I've seen plenty of funny tweets hypothesizing what started the fight. It's
so,
been great.
So this Twitter account named Ball from Grace, it's got like 1,500 followers. It did one of those things whenever you have a juicy story like this that is serious, but not like serious, serious. They poke fun of it and they pretend to grab a screenshot from The Athletic with the back black background. I don't know why I couldn't say that. With the white writing, making it look like it's an Athletic article, and they just write their own text in it. So once again, just so people don't say that we got ball sack sports, I know this is a parody account. I know this is not real, but I laughed when I read the parody version of this. According to sources, Poole began telling teammates of his plan to use his lucrative new extension to install a pool at his house. I'll call it the Jordan Pool because it's going to be the GOAT pool, allegedly said. Everyone can come swim in my Jordan pool as soon as I get paid. Teammates soon tired of the joke, however, when he refused to stop telling it. When Draymond Green eventually suggested Poole find some new material, Poole said, "If you keep talking like that, you won't be allowed in my Jordan pool." The statement then prompted Green to close his eyes and start swinging, witnesses say. Now, we know this isn't true. We know that this is a parody. But I really wish this was the reason. Because yesterday, when this story gets dropped on The Athletic, the actual story, that Draymond Green threw a punch at Jordan Poole, that's all it basically said. It said more details to come. And we never really got what the details were or why Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole. So when I saw this parody account tweet this out, I go, that is gold. And that's a different level of creativity, only coming from an account with 1,500 followers. So that's a good job by this at Ball from Grace account giving us all a chuckle. Could you imagine if that was actually true? Got a young kid, Jordan Poole. Yeah, you guys could all come swim my swimming pool. We'll call it the Jordan Poole. It'd be great. Hey, youngster, shut up. We're sick and tired of the joke. Yeah, you just won't be able to swim in the Jordan Poole. Punch. I wish that was true. That would be maybe the best sports story ever.
I wish you told him, hey, hit 5 jump shots in a row. Boom. There are some good hypotheticals. That would be just absolute internet gold if any of them were true.
Hey, I'm signing with the Celtics, Draymond Green. Boom. Anyway, this is now the second time. And we know Draymond Green is a provocateur. We know he loves being the villain, even if it's on his own team, stirring up drama on his own team. But to get serious here for a second, we've seen a constant trend. Guy gets a lot of attention. Guy then in line to either leave the team or get paid by the team. And Draymond doesn't like that uncertainty. Because when this happened with Kevin Durant, and there was a serious thought that Durant was leaving the team and the expectation he was leaving the team, Draymond said, we're sick and tired of you holding us hostage here. We won before you. We could win without you. Now, he ended up being right, because I think Kevin Durant would love to go back to Golden State and may have even tried to do that this offseason. You had Steph talking about it. Not that that led to a punch, but it led to an altercation between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant. Now, here, you have a youngster in Jordan Poole who was instrumental with the resurgence of the Golden State Warriors. He's about to get paid in a big way. And all you know is that they were supposedly going back and forth and that this was brewing. And then Draymond punches Jordan Poole. So I don't know what the reason is, but I'm not giving Draymond Green the benefit of the doubt and thinking that Draymond Green's actually in the right for punching Jordan Poole. If I had to assume, and you know what happens when you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. But if I had to put my life savings on the line, since we haven't really got any clarity in the last 24 hours, this is just Draymond being Draymond, and probably Jordan Poole didn't really do anything that was egregious or even out of line, Ryan.
You're probably right. This does kind of lend another question I want to ask you.
Ooh, is there there's a but here?
No. It's a serious question.
Uh-huh.
As you know, the GOAT debate in the NBA is always highly contested, LeBron and Michael Jordan. Is it time we put Draymond Green in that conversation? Because real GOATs punch other teammates.
Ba-dum-bum. You're reaching there. When has LeBron ever punched a
Well, he hasn't. So two out of the three. But that's why he's not in the, that's why most people don't consider him the GOAT.
So can I give you advice on how to make a better joke? You should have went with some Steve Kerr kind of line of thinking here. Because Steve Kerr once got punched in the face by Michael Jordan. So maybe you could have used some Steve Kerr angle, just trying to have you go back to the drawing
that
board.
Jordan Poole's going to be the next best head coach in the NBA in like 20 years?
Potentially. I don't know if that's the joke necessarily.
Turn around, you know, getting punched.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you got some work to
Draymond
do.
Draymond and MJ, man. More in common than LeBron and MJ, that's for sure.
That wasn't your best work here. You've done a lot of good work on this show, and I appreciate that good work, but you were reaching more than John Gruden and Mike Mayock in the draft right there on that one. It is the Zach Gilb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Is this an issue? Or is this something that just happens in the offseason and then it goes away?
I don't know. Now, did the punch land? He just threw a punch, was the wording in the report. Did the punch land? Because I don't know about you. If I'm Jordan Poole and I got punched in the face, if I actually got punched in the face by Draymond Green, that's got to linger.
Not excusing it. This is who, now not punching exactly, but.
That's a different level.
It is.
There's a different.
It is.
Of really grinding some gears, right? There's a difference in stirring the pot, trying to get the best out of everyone, and certain tactics. And I think we've all done that where you know you're being a jackass. When you throw a punch at a teammate, and Draymond, as good as he is, here's a hot take, he ain't Michael Jordan. That could create a little bit of awkwardness. Now, does it carry over into the season? I don't know. Come postseason time, are you able to sweep it under the rug? I would imagine. But Jordan Poole is a pretty significant player for the Golden State Warriors. Not only can he hit those outside shots, but he's also got some youth on those legs, which can also ease up some playing time for Steph and Clay that you need just to be healthy for postseason. Played a big role in that championship. So I just wonder how much longer this does linger. Let's hear from Bob Myers. Bob Myers says the Warriors will discipline Draymond Green internally.
Everybody's fine. Jordan practiced today. So Draymond didn't. Look, it's the NBA, professional sports. These things happen. Nobody likes it. We don't condone it, but it happened. Draymond apologized to the team this morning. Jordan was there in the room. I was there in the room, the team, the coaches, the players. And we heard that. As far as any suspension, punishment, fine, we're gonna handle that internally.
You also got to wonder, too, and I know Bob Myers said that it did not play a role, but he said contracts did not play a role that fueled this argument. Draymond in line to get one final big payday. You know Jordan Poole's in line to get a big payday. Could there have been some bad blood there? Bob Myers said he does not believe contracts fueled the argument between Jordan Poole and Draymond Green. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. When we return, one of the legendary play-by-play men in the history of sports. Kevin Harlan, great job. NFL on CBS, Westwood One Sports, NBA on TNT. He stops by the Zach Gelb Show in 5 minutes.
Hey guys, Mike Valeni for Cash the Ticket podcast. If you like sports betting or if you just like sports, it's the podcast for you. We try to cover all the big games and maybe some of the games you didn't even know were important, give you some angles, pick some winners, have a good time, and hopefully help you meander through college and pro football season. So join us a couple times a week to get all your information you need to bet the games that you watch. It's Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.